Proudly presented by Paul Everett's RV Country. This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, learning a little bit about the 10th Mountain Division today and a lot about the unique journey of Dick Over, 92 years old, of Golden, Colorado. He's originally from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. It was the Army that first brought him to the Rocky Mountains, training at Camp Hale with the 10th Mountain Division during World War II. For photos and even a couple videos of Dick, head over to hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. When we left off, he told us how he was moved from the infantry section of the 10th Mountain to a signal company, and as such, he got to drive a vehicle called a Weasel, which would come in very handy during intense winter maneuvers there.
We went through winter maneuvers called D-Series, and that sounds for Division Series. It was right in the middle of winter, 30 below zero all the time, and it was tough. Fortunately, I was the driver of that Weasel, and I survived. I had an open port to the engine, and I stayed warm, and I could sleep in my sleeping bag in that Weasel at night. So
the other guys were in foxholes in the snow, or what?
Yeah.
Ooh,
yeah,
big
yeah,
difference.
Yeah, big difference, yeah. They're not so much foxholes as mountain tents.
Okay.
During that time, right after the D-Series finished, the unit was prepared to go eventually overseas. And at that time, a bulletin came across from Washington asking for anyone in the military who had any maritime service to take an examination for a warrant officer's rating. Well, sitting next to me was a Norwegian, another Norwegian. I seem to be tied in with Norwegians like Dr. Jensen back in Pittsburgh. But this fellow said to me, he had been in the first officer on a Norwegian ship when Germany invaded Norway, and he sailed the ship right into New York. And they put him, because he was a Norwegian in Norway, at that time, had a small unit of Norwegian soldiers that were sent to Camp Hale.
Hmm.
And they were to be our eyes and ears to go in and free Norway from the Germans. That was a big plan on the military. Eisenhower scrubbed that, saying that they had further plans to go into the main continent, and they could bypass Norway and starve them out. But they sent these Norwegians to a small unit to us to get us acquainted with what they had in their country. It was a small unit of about 50 Norwegian skiers. And anyway, this Bill Bisseth was one of them and sat next to me. And he says, Dick, this bulletin just came out. He says, why don't you apply for this warrant officer's rating? And I said, well, why don't you? He said, I've had my days at sea. He says, I'm happy just where I am here as a radio operator. And so I applied. At that time, the ranks were pretty well filled. I was just a corporal. It looked pretty good if I could take an examination for something higher. There were about 13 or 14 of us fellows that applied, and the headquarters were not about to let any of us out. They failed all of us. I mean, they weren't going to let anybody out, but they had to follow that order and give us some kind of an examination. Well, the captain that was, he might have owned a motorboat someplace. Maybe he knew the difference between the bow and the stern, but he sure didn't know anything else. So they flunked all of us.
Uh-huh.
Off we go to Camp Swift in Texas to prepare us. They were adding heavy weapons and some additional units, some small anti-aircraft units and whatnot, prepared to go overseas. We didn't know where, had no idea. I was sitting in the PX having a beer one night, and a fellow comes over and he says, Dick, didn't you apply for that warrant officer's rating? He says, I did. And I said, yeah, I did. And he said, we're in a different service command now, and there's five of us that are going to reapply at headquarters. Do you want to go with us? I said, I sure do. So all of us went down. They interviewed us briefly. Separately, they issued tickets, and we got on the railroad, and we all ended up at the Port of Embarkation in New Orleans. I had asked one of the fellows who was interviewed first, what do they ask you? What questions? And he said, well, they're looking for both engine room officers and deck officers. And I didn't know much about engine room stuff. And I remembered I had seen a diesel ferry boat at down just a couple of blocks away. So I quickly went down and bought some tickets to ride the ferry, and I went aboard the ferry. First thing I did was go down the gangway to the engine room.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys looked at me, and they were busy working. He says, can we help you, son? And I said, well, I'd like to think so. I said, I'm going to take an examination tomorrow, and I don't know much about diesel engines. Can you tell me something? Yes, he said. I was in my Army uniform, and they were pretty good. So they told me a little bit about engines. I didn't know that a diesel engine, in order to start it, it started with compressed air. And so they told me, and they were grinding the valves, and they told me all kinds of things. And so the next day I went before this old sea captain, and he was a crusty old sea captain. You just looked at him and you knew he was. And he said, son, what are you, a deck officer or an engine room officer? I said, I'm familiar with both. He says, oh, no. He says, you're better on one. What are you better? And I thought a minute. I said, well, they'd be better taking an examination as a deck officer. So he said, all right. How many ropes on a ship? Well, that's one of the first things I learned. I said, well, there are only 7 ropes on a ship. All the rest are called lines and hauls. And he looked at me, and he said, okay. He said, you're in a pilot house. He says, can you box a compass? Yes, sir, I can box it 16 or 32 points. He says, make it easy. So I boxed the compass for him at 16 points. He said, do you know your navigation? And I said, well, I said, I've spent a little bit of time in Chesapeake Bay. He said, you're leaving port. What are your color of your buoys? And I said, red and white, checkerboard. They may have a bell on them. They may have a flashing light. He said, all right, you're entering port. You've been to sea. What color are the buoys? I said, they're black. They're black and white. It could be the same thing, checkerboard. And all right. He said, I think you know something. He said, go back to your quarters and we'll cut orders for you. They sent me back to Camp Hale and got all 5 of us that had been accepted. And they took us and they said, we're going to discharge you today from the Army. We're going to re-enlist you in the Army Transport Service. And he said, don't think you can get away once you're discharged. You're still up for 24 hours. You're still under the Army. And they were taking no chances with us. All 5 of us were sent by rail to Camp Beale in California, where they were assembling a large contingent of replacement officers going to Alaska and the Aleutian Islands. So we stayed there for 2 weeks. They put us on a train and sent us to Seattle, where they boarded us on a ship and headed for Alaska. And that was Christmas time. So we spent Christmas on the ship in a terrible storm.
Ooh.
A lot of us were seasick. So anyway, we got to there and took us, this whole shipment was to replace the officers who were already in the Alaskan department, who had been there for maybe a year's duty, and the Aleutian Islands. The Aleutian Islands was now in the process of being made into a series of bases. What had happened, the Japanese had first taken the island of Attu.
Right.
The Marines and the Army went in and took the Japanese out there. They had also moved down to the island of Kiska, 2 other islands away. They were building a miniature submarine base there, plus a small airstrip. And it was from that airstrip that they bombed Dutch Harbor. And when they bombed Dutch Harbor, Roosevelt said, get them the hell off of American soil. And so they said, when the 10th Mountain Division is finished in Europe, we'll bring them out and we'll send them off to attack the island of Honshu. So we were sent out there to build bases. The only deep sea port was Seward, Alaska. I was put on a first mate of an ocean-going tug, and we carried barge loads of road-building machinery, steam shovels, rollers, earth-moving equipment. They had no ports in the islands, and the only way they could get them in was put them on a barge. You towed the barge out from Seward to wherever they wanted to, one of the islands that they were going to build a base on, and we'd take those barges and get behind them or on side of them and run them right up on the beach. The guy behind me with another one would ride, pull it up and tie up to that thing. Pretty soon we had a dock and they could start to unload equipment and materials. And they built warehouses. I hauled barrels and barrels of aviation fuel and diesel fuel between Seward and several of the islands out there.
You know, there are a few points where your story turned and you talked about some of them already, but you mentioned when you were in the infantry part of the 10th Mountain and when you made that shift to the Signal Corps and then eventually you end up on ships, which no one envisioned, I'm sure, at that point in the story. Yeah. I'm sure there are a lot of guys that you trained with at Camp Hale that went over to Italy and didn't come home.
Yeah, and that's the reason that I'm giving talks like I did this morning. Those fellas would want us to tell the legacy of the 10th. And that's what most of us, Hugh Evans that I was with this morning, and he was quite a hero, got the Silver Star for what he did. We're trying to keep that legacy alive. But in order to, and partly to do that, we came back and we were skiers. We've developed a ski industry. We are responsible, and there's no, it's partly pride. It's pride, two things, for what we did in World War II, our part of taking the Germans from Italy, then coming back and doing the thing that we had learned to do with ski and start Aspen, Steamboat Springs, Copper Mountain, Winter Park was already started. That's where I've been teaching. We started the ski industry. Colorado alone, this year, it's $5 billion business.
Wow. And when you say we started that, you mean 10th Mountain 10th troops Mount- who came home 10th, from the war?
Yes.
What was it before? Some of those places just, there were no ski runs at all.
There was no ski. There were a few skiers from Sweden and Norway had moved into Wisconsin and Minnesota and places and set up ski jumps in small areas. One fellow famous came to Steamboat Springs and started Howlson Hill. So we really take pride in the fact that we have been responsible. And then, of course, it grew on its own because it became a big sport. And a lot of our fellows came back and designed ski equipment. Bob Parker became the public relations man for Vail and did all kinds of public relations work to build Vail to what it is.
But basically what you're saying, so I understand, I want people to understand too, you're saying that, you know, in World War II, it was devastating. I mean, so many millions died around the globe and more than 400,000 Americans died. But without World War II, without the training that was necessary because combat was going to be taking place in these alpine areas, without all of that, this huge ski industry in Colorado wouldn't have developed, or at least not the way it did.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
I bet most people have no clue that that's the case.
Well, it's gradually. It's becoming aware.
And one thing in recent years that's really helped in that regard is the documentary Climb to Glory, produced by legendary skiing filmmaker Warren Miller. I have that movie, thanks to Dick, and I'm going to let you listen to the intro of that film right now, narrated at first by a famous Olympian.
My name is Jeremy Bloom. The sport of skiing has taken me around the world. From the Olympic Games to unknown peaks in Alaska. I can't imagine my life without a connection to the mountains. And much of what I've experienced, in fact, what all skiers and snowboarders have experienced, is owed to an unlikely group of men, a band of brothers who literally put skiing on the map. This is their story.
Sometimes to learn the greatest thing about the present, you gotta step back to the past.
In the mountains, in the woods, we take our chances with anyone.
It was different. Military skiing was entirely different than what I pictured it.
If you think of a mountaineer, you think of a character. You were with a group of people that had that tendency.
And there are some days, you know, it was so beautiful, so inviting, we just take off.
These guys were not only fun-loving, but man, they were tough.
We were there because we wanted to be there.
And I thought they were going to kill us all off.
Just keep your heads and remember your instructions.
We paid a very, very severe price for the number of months we were in battle against the Germans.
1,000 were killed and 4,000 more were wounded. The greatest blessing that came out of the 10th for many of us was the great common love of the mountains. And it became the lives of most of us. The grandeur of the mountains, it just gradually seeped into my body, and I knew that this was something that I was going to enjoy for the rest of my life.
And that voice you heard at the end there, you probably recognize as the voice of Dick Over. He is featured heavily in that superb documentary, Climb to Glory. I have some information linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com about that film. When we come back, we'll hear how Dick has been involved in preserving the history of the 10th Mountain Division in other ways. Hometown Heroes comes right back after this. With 8 locations in 5 states, there's probably a Paul Everett's RV Country within driving distance of this radio station. But really, it doesn't matter where you live, because Paul Everett has a fly and buy program that will fly you to any of his locations to buy your new RV. It's one of those things that make doing business with Paul such a unique pleasure. Serving RVers for 55 years, you'll find Paul Everett's RV Country throughout the West and online at rvcountry.com.
This February,
when the Messiah comes, Rome will be nothing.
Prepare to witness the miracle that changed the world forever.
The Nazarene city rise again after 3 days. We will lose peace and order if it's true.
Through the eyes of a non-believer. Risen, starring Joseph Fiennes.
The tomb is sealed. Guard it with your life.
The most important manhunt in history.
The body has vanished.
His tomb is empty.
Was just beginning.
No more lies. What happened to the body?
The ropes, they just exploded.
Risen.
Where else you go?
You tell me.
You're looking for something you'll never find.
Open your heart and see.
Risen. Rated PG-13. Maybe inappropriate for children under 13. Now playing. For tickets and showtimes, go to risen-movie.com.
Paul Everett's RV Country has 8 locations in 5 western states, including Fresno and Indio, California, Bullhead City, Arizona, Laughlin, Nevada, Coburg, Oregon, right off the I-5, and 3 locations in Washington, Fife, Milton, and Mount Vernon. Over 55 years of experience serving the needs of RVers across the country and proud supporters of Hometown Heroes. Find a location near you by visiting rvcountry.com.